And good morning. You're listening to WGBH's Morning Edition. It is Thursday morning at 8:49, and joining me as usual, WGBH's arts editor, Jared Bowen. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, we're starting off with a kind of an exciting rock and roll show that's making the rounds.
It just opened last night at the Colonial Theater. It's Million Dollar Quartet, which is really, really fun, I have to say. And this is, first of all, it's a great concept, and it's taken from real life. On December 4th, 1956, four who would ultimately be legends, singers gathered in Memphis in the recording studio of Sam Phillips. And they were Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins.
They were all there?
They all gathered together. They all knew each other. They had all sort of come up together at varying stages in their career. Johnny Cash had already started to have his pretty big success. Elvis Presley had gone to Hollywood by this point. And Carl Perkins, somebody who had written Blue Suede Shoes, which Elvis Presley later recorded, he was trying to gain a foothold in his career. And then Jerry Lee Lewis here is depicted as sort of this insolent child who's just wild and crazy with this intolerable hair and attitude. And so you see all of these men come together in this 90-minute show, which is very, very fun. And before I get any further, I just want to... I had an opportunity to talk to James Barry, who plays Carl Perkins, and he talked about the four men who come together without realizing, in his words, that they're really the Mount Rushmore of early American rock and roll.
You've got Johnny Cash's boom-chicka-boom... train engine country sound. You've got the bluesy, bendy lead guitar riffs of Carl Perkins. You've got Jerry Lee Lewis's psychotic boogie-woogie, you know, a million miles an hour. And then you've got, I mean, Elvis, just so iconic, everything he did visually and sonically. It's just, they're so different. And to celebrate all those guys together and the fact that it all happened in the same place, they all recorded for the same tiny little label that used to be an auto parts shop. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable how humble the beginnings are.
Wow. How are these guys, you know, a lot of times when people play famous musicians, it doesn't come off, but it does in this show?
It does. I mean, I will be honest, there's a mix. Some of the acting is wooden. I would say, but with half the cast, the acting is wooden. But all four actors are playing their instruments. They're playing guitar, playing piano, and singing, and the singing is incredible, especially the actor who is playing Johnny Cash.
Really?
You feel like you're looking at Johnny Cash up there. If you close your eyes, you could swear you're listening to him, especially when you go back to that younger voice and that younger Johnny Cash. And I mean, this is a different time where, you know, it's not like we had What Rhymes With Hug Me, the blurred lines music of Robin Thicke from today. These were really strong songs, strong music that was coming from the American heart, from soul, and from the population in the South, which just found their identities through music. So I love that you're really getting reacquainted with the fundamental DNA of American music.
All right, it's Million Dollar Quartet playing at the Colonial Theater through October 20th. And speaking of singing, next we turn to Baritones Unbound.
This is a fun show. It's playing at the Paramount Center main stage. It's an Arts Emerson show. It's playing through October 20th. And this is really the concept of Mark Kudish, who's a Tony-nominated actor and singer, a baritone voice. And he has really decided to look at the history of the baritone voice. And it sounds academic at the outset, because in this show, they spend about 2 hours looking at the history from Mozart all the way to the present of the baritone voice, and essentially what happened to it. Because there was this heyday in the 1940s, basically, through the 1960s, they will argue it's a second heyday, where you had these musicals like Camelot and Carousel and Bye Bye Birdie, where all of these pieces of music were written for the baritone voice because you were telling the stories of the everyman. And the most common voice, your voice, mine is certainly a baritone, not that I sing very much, but these are the stories of the real-life, everyday people. And so this show tells that story. And I talked to David Dower, who is the artistic director at Arts Emerson and also the director of this show, on where the baritone fits in.
The baritone has actually, through time, developed this set of characteristics that are very much the common man. And so over time, you see the music move from characters that are the lovers and angels and the gods and kings, you know, tenors and basses, and into the middle comes this character who also sings in the most common male speaking range.
Well, I thought since the tenors were getting all of the attention and the fame that the baritones wanted to weigh in, too.
Well, David Dower also joked with me. He said this is also could be considered the baritone employment project because you have three baritones who are the stars of this show and taking you through this history, and it's their favorite songs. And I mean, the other great element of this show is they look at identities who are created through their voice, and they point out that Bing Crosby was first heard on the radio. Nobody knew who he was. They didn't That's know anything right. about his personality, offstage, anything, but people gravitated to that voice, and that's what created his stardom.
Okay, so that's the Baritones Unbound, which is happening now, presented by Arts Emerson, playing at the Paramount Center main stage through October 20th. Next, we turn to the iconic work of Andy Warhol and photography, and I kind of like the title of the show, Image Machine, and it's at the Rose Art Museum at Brandeis.
Yeah, I love this title, too, because it tells you everything about Andy Warhol. I mean, we know how iconic he is. We know how commercial he was and remains today and sort of what his legacy has been. But what the Rose Art Museum has done here is they've gone back, and first of all, it's a great testament to the museum itself because 90% of this collection in this museum exhibition is from the museum's own holdings.
Wow.
Because they have such a fabulous collection of modern art there. But they tell the story of Andy Warhol through photography, which is really, really interesting. And I've been busy lately, Bob. I've been talking to all these people, but I talked to their new museum director, Christopher Bedford, on Warhol's unconventional sketchbook, which you see in the show.
These Polaroids were really, they were an origin point for a lot of his work, and that they were almost like sketches. He would then extract and make other work. So you really get to the basis of his studio practice. But I do think that there's a kind of hand-to-mind quality in the Polaroids, and particularly when you look at them, you lay them all out, and you see which one of the Polaroids eventually became a bigger work, you can see his mind at work.
That's fascinating. Now, only a few years ago, the Rose Art Museum was on the verge of closure, wasn't it? They were going to sell off all the assets there?
It was, and this is really the museum reclaiming itself, although Christopher Bedford sort of bristled at that word choosing by me. But he's a 36-year-old museum director who's come in recognizing that the Rose Art Museum, its image was sort of tarnished when the then president decided that he was going to sell off the collection, the holdings. And I think a lot of people in this community sort of don't know what happened. And Christopher Bedford is now trying to put the museum back upright. He started by reintroducing it to the campus, making sure that this is a museum for the students of Brandeis University. And now they're looking wider. So bring the community back in. And he actually looks at that moment when the collection was likely going to be sold as sort of a fiery point that was really galvanizing for the museum because you saw the art community worldwide respond to this and make sure that this didn't happen. Of course, lawsuits ensued that also made sure it didn't happen. But this is his way of saying, no, we're back, we're strong. We're now celebrating our collection through shows like Warhol, and we're here.
Well, the Rose, I mean, when that story came up and people learned what was actually in that museum, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, including one of Andy Warhol's most iconic pieces, right. Saturday Night Disaster, which is about a car crash taken from a picture.
Right. That's right. The Rose Art Museum, Andy Warhol Image Machine. And, of course, Jared, you're very busy because you have your show tomorrow night, Open Studio, which can be seen at 8:30 on WGBH2.
Yeah, and tomorrow night we feature She Who Tells a Story, which we'll be talking about next week. It's a Museum of Fine Arts show all about Arab and Iranian photographers from the Middle East and their story, which is fascinating. We talked earlier this summer about the Colby College Museum of Art and that $100 million gift of art. You can see it tomorrow night on our show. Oh. We'll also talk to you'll hear more of my interview with the Baritones Unbound creators.
Okay, sounds like fun. Tomorrow night, Open Studio, 8:30 on WGBH2. And as always, thank you, Jared Bowen.
All right, thanks, Bob.
See you next Thursday.